Welcome to Compliance Perspectives. I'm Courtney Nordrum from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Today I'm here with Lisa Fine. Lisa is the Director of Global Compliance for Gate Group in Reston, Virginia. Welcome to the podcast, Lisa.
Thank you.
Lisa is here speaking at our European Compliance and Ethics Conference, our annual event. We're going to be talking about whistleblower hotlines in a minute. But first, how did you get into compliance? What's your compliance story?
My compliance story, I started as a lawyer a while ago at a New York-based law firm living in Washington, D.C. And during that time, I was a general litigator, and I also worked in pro bono and ran our Washington, D.C. pro bono program. And after that, I did something fairly unusual, which is I left the practice of law for a couple of years, worked in a ski resort, booked ski lessons, which I don't think anyone thought it would go quite that way in this particular interview, I'm guessing, Courtney.
But probably not, but that's a great story.
I also worked in a disability advocacy group out in Park City, Utah, where I lived. And so after I came back to Washington, D.C., I really spent some time trying to figure out how I could incorporate these different things I was interested in, doing the right thing, the law, and wanted to work with people. And it just evolved eventually into compliance because I was originally doing some, I got a job doing employment and U.S. compliance at Gate Group. And then I started in working in compliance after a few years as my role evolved.
Like I mentioned before, Lisa is speaking about whistleblower hotlines in Europe. Why did you propose that session topic?
It's interesting because talking about my background sort of segues into why I ended up doing this proposal is that I, in my U.S. role, implemented a U.S. whistleblower hotline, and it was not very complicated. And I did it very well because it was not that complicated, and our company said, can you help us implement a hotline globally? And what I learned through that process, it ended up being one of the reasons I now work in a global role, and I've learned a lot about our company. But coming into that from scratch, what I learned about whistleblower hotlines culturally, regulatory, country by country, and how to do that throughout the world, and particularly in Europe, was something that I found so valuable in my own career that I thought there was something that would be valuable to share to other people, particularly as Europe is not has not evolved in the same way or the same comfort level with whistleblower hotlines.
So let's talk about that and add some context to the why. Because there's a very good reason why Europe has lagged behind everyone with whistleblower hotlines. World War II.
Yes.
For a lot of it.
Yes. I mean, it's not so much a lag behind, it's just a very different focus on it in that there really is a belief in our company and in a lot of places in Europe that many of the issues that come to light about people and their privacy and accusing people of allegations that have to do with HR and behaviors are things that should be held in country or dealt with in person and to be respectful. And there's a view and a perception that by going into a whistleblower hotline, you're sending something globally that may not necessarily need to be there. And also, as you said, World War II and the individual rights issues. So there is there are a lot of good reasons. And that's one of the things you have to consider when you're implementing a whistleblower hotline for your company. Do you just use something that, you know, is more strict, use, you know, some of the guidance and the EU directives, or do you just say we're not as concerned about that? And that varies a lot from your company, what they want, your works councils.
What have you found to be the biggest challenges as you move through Europe specifically with hotlines?
I think it's a comfort level and acceptance is probably the first thing, the willingness to get through works councils, first of all, in that there is a feeling there that they'd rather have all issues come to them first,
yes,
and then they deal straight with you. The second is a comfort level with even genuinely publicizing it and explaining it. And the third one, and maybe I should say this is the second one, is the logistics and the challenges of making one work both for in-country versus globally. For the global leadership.
If I'm recalling correctly, there are some countries that don't allow anonymous hotlines,
yes,
and some that only allow anonymous hotlines or don't allow you to take any data from the hotline callers?
A little bit. I think, okay, for example, Spain and Portugal do not allow anonymous calls.
Okay.
Some have specific data retention processes, amount of days, what you can and can't put in there. And that's why when you say that, I think it's more of allegations. For example, most countries will follow both UK Bribery Act and mm-hmm. Sarbanes-Oxley and say you can have financial allegations, espionage, sabotage, embezzlement, things like that, accounting, but they will not very strongly discourage or not allow certain HR allegations. So it really is a country by country analysis, especially if you're going to be transferring data country to country. That's one of the reasons some companies choose, like ours did, is to use a third party vendor that really keeps up on all of that.
Yeah.
Taking that as your first priority. Other companies have a higher comfort level with letting all the allegations come through, or you know, everything is centered maybe just in Europe and not so much globally. One of our co-panelists, they get all allegations through an internal line, whereas we use an external vendor and limit our allegations for Europe, with the exception of the UK, which allows sort of a broader scope of allegations to make sure we're in alignment with that. And I guess the last point I'd give on that is that with some of the third-party vendors, as soon as you close the case, they will delete your data in the requisite amount of time, country by country, so you do not have to keep up to date on those changes as much.
So data is on the top of everyone in Europe's mind, particularly with the GDPR coming in next May. What are some changes that are going to happen with whistleblower hotlines that you see tied to the GDPR, tied to the data policies that Europe is going to be under?
I'm not entirely positive that that will change as much as some of the others, because the protections generally in Europe, if they're there, have been very intended to keep private data private. It'll be more, if you're using somewhere like Navex, I don't think it will change as much because of the allegations and the time or third party. But I do think that there'll be a look at what servers are being used, mm-hmm. how are you restricting it, what is the privacy. But I do think a lot of the time it's been pretty constrained and it's less of a whistleblower issue. And at the same time, there's been some guidance that's come out that it tried, like in France, to expand whistleblower protections because people have traditionally felt somewhat unprotected in some of the more restricted countries. So I do think that there will be a bit of tension between those two topics. But ultimately, given the directives in the past of a lot like the EU directive and others, I think some of this is pretty tightly constrained. For some companies, it may be a bigger deal if they've tried a little bit more of a expansive approach.
What have you seen once the hotlines have been implemented as far as usage and reporting?
Very low, almost none for us in Europe,
really?
Except for in the UK. People are not yet as comfortable with it. It's been a challenge. We've done a variety of different kinds of let's announce it. Mm-hmm. We talk about it every year with works councils. We posters, we may be doing wallet cards, and it's our managing directors go out and talk about it. But I do think that the view that people are not using the whistleblower hotline in Europe unless it's very, very significant and they feel no other option is not untrue. On the flip side, when we would receive something from Europe or a country that people don't contact from us as much as frequently, it's usually something that's much more significant.
Do you think it's culturally just a difference of opinion, or is it fear of retaliation, or a combination of several factors that are keeping people from utilizing them the same way they're used perhaps in the U.S.?
I think it's a combination. I think there's a distrust of the technology, mm-hmm. And I don't even think GDPR will change that. I think people somehow, on the one hand, they're afraid of being retaliated against if they make the allegation into their HR or other people. But if it's going to a whistleblower hotline or an anonymous, they're not sure where it's going, so they don't trust where that's going either. And then you put in the cultural side of it. So I think it is an uphill battle at times. On the other hand, I think the more you talk about it and the more that you have compliance people or even legal or HR out in the units truly encouraging it, mm-hmm. or even if the works council did say, look, you have this option. I mean, we're still saying that I think it helps every time. And I also think that once people will see a bit more, you know, see action coming from it that makes them realize that something good is happening, mm-hmm. is important.
With the low usage and the difficulties implementing it, why do it in Europe?
Well, because I think that for those couple of calls, I think it makes sure that you have that option. Mm-hmm. If you don't do it, you're cutting out the person who really, really needs it. I think it is critically important to do everything you can. I'm thinking of it first from a, before I talk about it from a best practice or a, you know, this is the right thing to do in terms of if your government comes or your all of that. For your employees, for them to, even if they don't use it, to know that it exists, if there's something you really need to reach out for, is really important. I think also giving other avenues, you know, particularly in Europe, we may get an increase in HR reports. We have a code hotline that goes directly to the company, you know, to make sure people know it's out there, critical. The second point is if you are investigated, if you do have a bribery or a problem or something else that happens, and they come and say, you know, was there any way for people to anonymously get in touch with you? If your answer is, we didn't get any calls, so we closed it off, or we didn't open or have that option for people, it looks like your company's not as committed to compliance or to hearing from employees about what really goes wrong. It really does go also to company intent.
What are some resources that you used or that other compliance professionals can use to get more information on implementing hotlines in Europe and throughout the world?
Well, first of all, I can give you a nice plug for your SCCE site, because you do, yep, that's what I'm here for. But I do use the website, your website, to look at different presentations, and people have talked about different approaches on how to do it. I go very often, I use the Corporate Executive Board's Compliance and Ethics Leadership Council. They have different case studies, samples, and a lot of terrific statistics to talk about utilization and other things. And the other one is NAVEX has an annual benchmarking that just came out, I guess, last week. And that talks about utilization per year. They do a second report that talks about, and they are a very large company, so they talk about all of their different customers and different industries, how many people call per thousand. You know, they've divided it by North America versus, you know, rest of world, and you can really get a sense of how that part's working. So those are three that I look at a lot. Some of the legal resources are helpful too, but CEB, SCCE site, and some of the NAVEX, Conversant has some nice stuff too. But those are, you know, some of the different ones. They really are very, very helpful.
Well, Lisa, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your incredibly busy schedule here at the ECEI and joining me to talk about whistleblower hotlines in Europe.
Well, thank you so much. It was a great opportunity for me as well. Thanks so much.